Hello, you're listening to New England Climate Conversations, the podcast all about the impacts of climate change and how we can make a difference. As always, I'm your host, Owen, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Dean, Luna, and Corbin. On this episode, Dean will talk about the effects of climate change on oceans broadly, before Luna discusses the effects on lobsters and right whales, as well as how climate change impacts fisheries and conservations. But first, we'll get into our weekly Climate Bites. For those tuning in for the first time, Climate Bites is our rapid-fire segment about recent major climate events. I'll turn it over to Luna to start.
A developing tool in the remediation of ocean acidification has been showing promise in recalibrating increasingly acidifying oceanic conditions. Professor Catherine Hornbostel of the University of Pittsburgh, Swanson School of Engineering, is currently refining and testing out a system of capturing CO2 from the ocean via pH modification. Two models are in the works, one using microencapsulated solvents made of sodium carbonate and another using hollow fiber membrane contactors containing sodium hydroxide. These sodium compounds then react with carbon dioxide. The capsules can also be reused and allow for a large portion of CO2 to be removed and placed into storage facilities. The hollow fiber membranes take seawater and capture CO2 after the water reacts with the sodium hydroxide solvents. Hornbostel's paper on the technology states that 10 gigatons of carbon dioxide must be removed from the environment each year by 2050 to ensure that global oceanic temperatures do not rise more than 1.5 degrees Celsius. Carbon dioxide dissolves into carbonic acid, which lowers the ocean's pH levels. This creates a hostile condition for vast amounts of sea life and beyond. For example, gastropods in the Gulf of Maine are facing declines in multiple factors of species resilience. The technology will need to be scaled to massive areas of land and sea, among other considerations. This is Luna with New England Climate Conversations. Over to you, Dean.
Today we'll be discussing ocean warming and climate change. So climate change-related warming is bringing trouble to certain large species of fish. Think sharks, tunas, and swordfish. And of course, this has a rippling effect across both ecology and economy. A Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution study posits that 70% of habitat for certain large fish species could be lost by the end of the century. An increase of almost 10 degrees Fahrenheit, which is an incredible amount, is predicted for areas where keystone large fish like the marlin and the skipjack live. A majority are migratory over fairly long distances, so warming waters will distort the migration patterns and locations for these impacted species. These large fishes are apex predators, and most are valued sources of food for humans as well. This, of course, has detrimental effects on fish markets and regulatory practices for humans. Each species for the regional market rakes in millions of dollars globally. Just as an example, albacore tuna for the region netted more than $36 million at the docks. This also includes behavioral and locational modifications, such as fishing earlier in the season or in slightly adjacent waters. This is one among many pressing issues, such as mass coral die-off and weakening of ocean currents, a list of impending signs of oceanic collapse, which we'll be discussing later on in the episode. Now I'll turn it over to Corbin.
Climate change is influencing bird migration. Birds are waiting longer to migrate in the spring and are flying faster to try and make up for their lost time. This not only tires out the birds, but lowers their survival rates for migration. Depending on the bird, the migration, and the location, the bird's survival rate can drop by 6% or more. Though it is recorded that birds will get to their destination faster, it does drop their survival rates by a shocking amount. Birds rely on cues from their environment, for example the temperature or the cycle of plants, to plan for migration. Currently, more than two-thirds of America's birds are threatened with extinction due to climate change. In the future, birds are expected to become heavier and develop shorter wings in order to compensate for the changing climate. Naturally, climate change affects the habitats of our birds, which in turn messes with the reproduction and sources of food and water. Animals can adapt to their environments given the proper time, but continuous change is not good for them or us, so we should continue to try and act against it. Due to human-caused carbon dioxide being produced and put in the atmosphere, there has been an increase in the acidity of our ocean waters. The CO2 is being dissolved from the atmosphere and into our oceans, causing the pH levels to drop. The ocean absorbs roughly 30% of all CO2 released into the atmosphere, and so the more emissions we produce, the larger the percentage of absorbed carbon dioxide there will be. Acidity in the ocean will not only affect us, but the creatures living in it, by changing the natural habitat that the ocean animals are used to, causing the entire food chain potential risk. The ocean for many is a source of food or even their job, and within the next century it's possible you will see even more of an increase in the acidity unless we do something to try and combat it. It has been noted that animals with shells or self-calcifying bodies are in danger due to the acidity in the water, causing their shells and bodies to soften, leaving them more prone to injuries. This is just one of the many different ways climate change is affecting our world, and it will continue to do so until we decide to take action.
All right, let's go to Dean to get us started.
So now let's get on to our first discussion of the day, how climate change affects the oceans generally. So climate change has dramatically affected our oceans in a rather negative way. Now, it may or may not be obvious how or why this is occurring, as well as how important this is, but there's a lot of misunderstandings regarding the subject, so it's important to have a conversation clarifying it. Well, let's start off with the one people are probably most familiar with, sea level rise. The sea levels rising is well documented, and since 1880 through the present day, they have risen, according to not only recent satellite measurements, but long-term tide gauge measurements, a total of 10 inches. According to the EPA, after approximately 2,000 years of no sea level change, since the 1880s, and particularly from 1960 onwards, the sea level has risen dramatically. While this rise has not been uniform globally, some weather stations in the Gulf Coast and parts of the Mid-Atlantic coast have recorded a rise of up to 8 inches between 1960 and 2021 alone. And what's nearly as well documented as the rise of the sea levels are the disastrous consequences that will result from it. Shoreline erosion, coastal flooding risk increase, increased storm damages, interference with farming, threat to wildlife. The list is nearly endless. There are projections that in 100 years, for example, certain coastal cities may be severely affected as well, with some even underwater. Think of Miami, parts of California, parts of down east Maine, where this is being recorded. If the settlement is coastal, rising sea level will eventually have some sort of negative effect on it. Another major effect of climate change on oceans is ocean acidification. Data from several key locations around the globe, such as Hawaii, the Canary Islands, Bermuda, and the Cariaco Basin in northern Venezuela, show not only increase in parts per million of dissolved carbon dioxide, but an associated lowering of the pH level, resulting in greater acidification. The most well-known negative effect of this acidification is the death of nearly all coral reefs on the planet, but this is not the only one. Rather unsurprisingly, this acidification also negatively affects marine life and biodiversity that produce carbonate structures, such as sea urchins, snails, oysters, anything with a shell and or exoskeleton in general. Even tiny single-celled organisms such as foraminifera struggle to build their tiny exoskeletons with current ocean acidification levels. And as these smaller creatures are affected, this produces waves up the food chain that can have harmful consequences for other creatures such as whales or humans. Sometimes referred to by the colorful moniker the osteoporosis of the sea, the consequences of acidification are negative and will certainly have a great negative effect on food chains as well. Another byproduct of climate change is on the ocean current. So this was touched upon in a previous episode of Climate Bite where we discussed the collapse of the AMOC, the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation. The AMOC circulates about 15 million cubic meters of water per second, so if this collapsed, the effects would be incredibly devastating to marine life, the currents, weather, and human settlements. Like I said, go give that a listen. It's episode 4 of our podcast. Anyway, but just as a brief reminder, as currents assist in regulating global temperatures by moving waters around, from the equator to the poles, warming and cooling them and back again, a collapse in ocean currents would result in even more extreme temperatures. You know, cold to the poles, hot near the equator, with the result being that even less land is now habitable for human life, a problem further compounded by other effects of climate change. And neither last nor least, but last for now for the sake of time, while all of the other issues contribute to this as well, which demonstrates well how interconnected the issue is, by the way, some more specifics on the issue deserve to be talked about. For example, we've touched on how coral and other such creatures are affected by ocean acidification, but there's also the issue of warming causing previous habitats to be, well, uninhabitable. Creatures must move to adapt with changing patterns of cooling and warming, often at a loss. If anyone watched episode 1, they'll recall an article about how lobsters in the Gulf of Maine have surged 525% in population, while in other parts of New England, further south, the populations have declined by up to 80%, a direct demonstration of this principle in action. So as we can see, the general effects of climate change on the oceans are as varied as they are dangerous. Climate change must be acted upon in a meaningful way, and soon, lest we experience all of these horrible side effects at once. It's always good to remind people that our future doesn't have to be oceanic current collapse, wars over water, extreme loss of biodiversity, loss of crop yields, etc. All the things we've discussed today and more. And now, switching to my colleague Luna, who will delve more into the impacts of climate change on particular marine ecosystems with a piece about the effect of climate change on right whales in the lobster industry. Take it away, Luna.
Here in down east Maine, lobster industry issues are hotly contested. Consider the North Atlantic right whale and the pitting of conservation activism against industry interests. What culprit is presented as the biggest threat to the right whale? Fishing gear, namely rope entanglements. Lobstermen say a way of life, one that is a cornerstone of Maine's maritime economy and seafaring culture, is at stake with mounting pressures of federal regulations and conservation activism. Fewer than 350 right whales remain, and the die-off rate has been accelerating, and in Maine, a glaring red target has been painted on the lobstering industry. If you're a Mainer, you'd be hard-pressed not to find yourself pulled into heated conversations about working-class families and government overreach, or hostile fanatic animal rights activism. Let's step back for a moment and go take a look at contributing factors to this current clash. On this episode and future episodes of New England Climate Conversations, I'll lay out some pertinent data and the voices of stakeholders in the region. Let's see if some common ground can be found. The North Atlantic right whale, listed as endangered, is seeing massive threats to their lifeways. Fewer than 70 breeding females have been observed by marine biologists. Stressors on mothers affects calving rates, meaning fewer calves being born. Entanglement in fishing gear and vessel strikes are the leading causes of death for the right whale. Vessel strikes refer to collisions with motorized vehicles, such as boats. These creatures are usually restricted to the waters of the continent's east coast. More than 60% of North Atlantic right whales have scarring as a result of the fishing gear and other objects related to maritime industry. Vessel strikes usually result in serious injury, impacting quality of life, and occasionally deaths occur, particularly for sows. The feeding grounds of the right whale overlap heavily with Maine's maritime businesses, which brings up the question, who's responsible for the decline? That is the subject of intense debate, which entangles climate change issues, cultural industries, and animal welfare. Let's take a brief look at some of the conservation measures for the North Atlantic right whale. The species has been hunted for centuries, which comprised a primary threat to their numbers until fairly recently. The right whale has been hunted for centuries, as they were called one of the easier kills for people to make due to their size and physical resource yields. Think of oil and baleen. The right whale has been close to extinction in the post-industrial age until its protection under the first international convention for the regulation of whaling in the 1930s. They are considered endangered, according to the International Union for the Conservation of Nature. Despite some overall increase within the last century, there has been a push and pull phenomenon of increase and decrease. Many conservation scientists say that the maritime industry is largely to blame. Enter Maine's lobster industry. As for the lobster industry, let's pull up some numbers. The population of the lobsters has declined more than 40% in New England's fishing waters. Size limitations for lobster catches kick in when young lobster populations decline more than 35%. Maine's lobster industry is valued more than $400 million, almost four-fifths of the nation's total of more than $510 million. However, this accounts for another low year compared to previous decades. In 2021, Maine's lobster industry supported well over 18,000 jobs. The Island Institute, based in Rockland, Maine, identifies three key aspects that comprise the threat to the lobstering economy: climate change, increasing cost of business, and regulations aimed at the endangered right whale conservation. In the past 6 years, vessel strikes have killed more than 12 whales, and entanglement with fishing gear has killed more than 9 and injured more than 66 others. Maine sells approximately 3 million permits for lobster traps annually. A plurality of traps linked together forms what is called a trawl. Vertical lines connect these trawls, which form tall towers of dense kelp-like forests of fishing gear up to buoys at the surface. In 2021, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration introduced regulations that would accomplish a number of remediation tasks: gear marking, rope amount reduction, and weak points in the gear, in which whales and other animals can break more easily through. Furthermore, a 1,000 square mile that the Gulf of Maine was closed for seasonal lobstering. Opponents of some of these regulations say that the data gathered is resultant from a worst-case scenario. A paucity of data from gear markings in particular means that some measurements are difficult to obtain. In 2020, Maine lobstermen started using ropes with purple strands, built to identify the source of interactions with the natural environment. These ropes are also engineered with special plastic splices and knots designed to break easily with impact. So how is this all playing out amongst industry and conservation interests, details-wise? Tune in next time on New England Climate Conversations for continuing dialogue on the lobster industry and right whale conservation. Thanks for listening. Back to you, Corbin.
And thank you very much for that piece on lobsters and right whales, Luna. And now Luna has another piece on the impacts of fisheries caused by climate change.
The titanic American Aquafarms is struggling to break ground in Maine. A proposal to build a 120-acre Atlantic salmon farm in the Frenchman Bay is hitting yet another snag. In summer 2023, the farm's facility in Goldsboro, Maine went up for auction. It used to be a lobster facility. This occurred when the 120-acre site generated controversy over its system of closed pens touted to be able to produce over 66 million pounds of salmon annually. It was met with widespread opposition from businesses and residents. So what is the current state of the aquaculture biz? Maine is one of many climate change arenas where impacts and their solutions have themselves become debates. Think aquaculture is a simple answer to the problems associated with the fishing industry? The solution is not so easy to parse through. It's not just climate impact remediation woes, it's also animal health and safety, economic welfare, and industry preservation. Certain issues are reappearing after a series of aquaculture industry regulations. In June 2023, Governor Janet Mills signed a bill that would make it more difficult for aquaculture developers to build fish farms in the state's waters. Legislative Document 1951, an act regarding marine fish aquaculture, establishes a stocking density of 30 kilograms per meter cubed for all future marine salmon aquaculture leases. So what does that particular number mean in that broad landscape of sustainable seafood, animal welfare, and climate change? I'll discuss some of the key issues contested throughout the state of Maine. In a press release from Oceana, a global conservation action group, a regulation like LD 1951 is critical to preventing typical aquaculture problems, an important one being the spread of disease. Matt Dundas, campaign director at Oceana, reprimanded the industry, saying, quote, "Monster fish farms have no place in Maine. Oceana applauds Maine for setting a clear statewide stocking density limit for salmon and other finfish farms, which will prevent monster-sized, disastrous aquaculture projects in our ocean," end quote. Opponents of unrestrained industry practices broadly mean higher risk of disease and even impacts on the very water ecosystems the modern industry is touted to protect. So how do these aquaculture projects fare in Maine? First, let's take a brief overview of how fish farms in the region operate. Overall, aquaculture has seen massive growth in Maine, with economic impact tripling from $50 million in 2007 to $137 million in 2014. Some communities, at the behest of particular action organizations, have been lobbying to have municipalities issue moratoriums and ordinances limiting aquaculture facilities in Maine. An Oceana poll found that 66% of poll residents in Hancock County, Maine, opposed the Aquafarms project. According to the Department of Marine Resources, leases for Maine aquaculture projects increased from about 110 to 185 in the period from 2017 to 2021. American Aquafarms, like some other massive aquaculture projects, have met with major setbacks. An early plan from the farm outlined a set of pens with stocking densities up to and even over 40 kilograms per meter cubed, which according to Oceana is a very risky endeavor. The presence of these facilities is a large obstacle within coastal habitats. In order to prevent disease, aquafarms use vast amounts of chemical compounds, including pesticides. Fish waste and uneaten feed pollute waterways and can set off a cascade of detrimental events like deadly algal blooms. Internal problems readily become external problems, and fish escapes and sea lice outbreaks are regularly reported in aquafarms around the world. In early 2022, the Maine Aquaculture Hub, Maine Sea Grant, and the Maine Aquaculture Association released the Maine Aquaculture Roadmap 2022 to 2032, a 10-year plan with 4 primary goals and identified funding sources for the industry. Quote, 4 goals are outlined in the roadmap. 1, develop a streamlined licensing and permitting process that balances the rights of an applicant and the public. 2, increase integration and understanding of aquaculture in Maine's coastal communities. 3, expand and promote the Maine seafood brand. 4, make Maine a leader in triple bottom line sustainable aquaculture, social, economic, environmental, end quote. Stakeholders in the industry are anticipating more growth, albeit with some caveats. A holistic approach in integrating animal welfare, prioritizing the local economy, and remaining flexible in the face of changing climate change conditions is needed. In future episodes, I will continue to cover fisheries issues within the region, focusing primarily on Maine. Thanks for listening. I'm Luna with New England Climate Conversations.
All right, that's all for this week's episode. Thank you to everyone for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on your favorite social media platform and share it with your friends. Also, if there are any topics you'd like us to cover in the future, feel free to reach out via social media or leave a comment on our YouTube channel. Join us next week when we'll be discussing some of the economic impacts of climate change, including its relationship with artificial intelligence and increasing migration.